Board time for October 2nd. Old business. First item on there. Paul's here and Marty to talk about Humane Society. And we'll turn it over to Mark.
And Lawrence Waters, who's done quite a bit of work on this.
There? Okay. Mark, lead on. Who's leading us on this?
Blair, why don't you take it since you've been communicating extensively with Mr. Stephen Hornstein?
Thank you, sir. Commissioners, we have to hand up to you three as we speak.
Thank you.
The proposed contract with Humane Society, it has in it virtually every provision that you've seen in prior contracts. And just a question of timing. With your approval, this would come up next week at a date and time that you set. But Humane Society asked to clarify that they would not want the time extended to get a yes or no decision on this contract as written.
Yep. And then we have two different pieces here. We have the contract piece, and then we have our ordinance piece as far as, you know, what changes we might want to make as far as the ordinance itself goes. So this is the contract piece that we have before us.
That's correct.
And here's some more. What I did is I copied off the some sheets from the previous. Oh, I need one of those. From previous contracts, and looking at the difference between them compared to the way it reads now, so to give us some insights. History is always a good instructor. So you can see back in 2001 it was $52 each. In 2003 it was. Anyway, went up to $58 in 2008. We're going up to $200 now, so it's basically a factor of 400% here in a relatively short period of time. One of the significant differences between those two is, you see, we started out with dogs and cats. And here we got dogs, cats, domestic birds, domestic rabbits, small mammals, fowls, goats, pot-bellied pigs, and small reptiles.
And that's all nature of our ordinance, correct?
It's actually the RCW defines animals, and we're bound by that
definition. And what does the RCW say as far as animals?
It says mammals, amphibians, birds, and reptiles.
Well, we understand what animals are. The question is, what does the... actually, there's two parts to this. One is, what is the role of the county when it comes to animals? And the other is the... the other is really the members of the public bringing animals in. That's really the main thing. So I don't mind changing. In fact, let me change course here. Rather than concentrate on the what kinds of animals, really the key, what I would suggest is that we strike out five words, or members of the public. Because basically, if we are enforcing the code that says we will make sure that the public is safe and animals are cared for within our control, then the county's designated animal protection and control agents are the ones that are doing that job and delivering those animals to the Humane Society. We have no control whatsoever of what members of the public can bring into the Humane Society. That's why we have appearing on our invoices things like guinea pigs and rabbits and birds. So the question is, do we have the freedom to just simply strike off those five words? All the rest of this contract will be fine.
Commissioner, a major concern is the way that the RCW is written, and it basically says any person can bring an animal to a Humane Society facility. If they don't have that ability, it could turn out that the next statute comes into play, and that requires the sheriff to take action. So our biggest concern is we'd be taking away an option right now that the public has that they use successfully, and possibly burdening the sheriff in a way that we're worried about.
Well, certainly would not want to do that, and that's not at all what I'm suggesting. This really has to do with billing, because the Humane Society is the one at the front desk to determine whether or not they're going to accept or reject an animal from either our agents or from the general public or the sheriff or anybody in the world. So that's really not what's in question. This really has to do with what animals is the county getting billed for. because if members of the members of the public can bring in animals, or you know, certainly we would in no way restrict that.
And if this, so let me put it this way then. So if the Humane Society, so we say, okay, we're only going to pay you for the ones that we bring in, for the animals that we bring in. Then the public brings them to the Humane Society, and the Humane Society says, well, we're not going to take animals that just the public is bringing in.
That's their choice.
Right, but then where does that leave us, the county, with the RCWs? What responsibilities do we have? That guy from the public says, here's a cat, here's a dog I found.
Here's a guinea
Here,
pig.
Take it. How many guinea pigs did we do last year? Just curious. Because we keep talking about these random animals. I'm just curious how many.
We had 17 so far year to date through July of this year.
17.
17.
So how many total dogs and cats?
We run upwards of for the county probably 1,100.
1,100. So 17. So let's not play at the fringe and play kind of on that end of it. So again, as far as getting away from the types of animals,
right here.
For any type, let's say it's a dog. Let's say it's a guinea pig. Whatever. The person said, gets to the door, they say, hold on, I need Blair, sorry. So they get to the door, Humane Society says, I'm sorry, we can't accept these animals from you, because we're not going to accept them from you, because we're not getting compensated for that at all. That person then says, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with this animal? And they call the county. What's our responsibility?
The statute that I'm concerned about the most places a direct duty on the sheriff. It's black and white.
So then the sheriff
gets
a call.
I see no alternative but the sheriff's responsibility under the statute.
I think we're asking the wrong question.
That's just the right question, actually.
Well, let me see if I can get what I think is the right question. First let me set the setting. The decision whether or not the Humane Society accepts an animal is purely theirs. And there's nothing in here that says you shall or you shall not accept any animals. That's their call, and they have already contributors that believe in that very good organization who provide funding for them, supplemental to what the municipalities provide. So there's nothing that ties our that says they cannot accept something if we don't pay them a full flat rate for something.
But what I'm saying is you don't get rid of the responsibility of it just because you say we're not paying for it. The Humane Society can say, well, we won't accept them. The responsibility, we are not relieved of the responsibility. The Humane Society has the freedom not to take those animals.
Right.
We do not have the freedom not to take those animals. From what I'm hearing, legally, the sheriff gets a call if those animals are not accepted by the Humane Society. So they may have freedom, like you said, to do this. We do not.
Well, they still have the freedom now.
Right, and we do not.
No,
we do.
Who does the sheriff's budget?
The sheriff. The sheriff has his own budget.
So even now,
the sheriff's office is overloaded already. You're not going to put this on the sheriff's office.
Even now, the Humane Society makes the call whether or not to receive an animal. Whether or not they get paid for it is theirs. It does say small.
It doesn't make sense that we pay
reptiles
$132 for a guinea pig.
So it's our responsibility by law. It's our responsibility. Are we agreed on that?
No.
For stray dogs.
For stray dogs and cats. Yes.
It says we may.
No.
Don't tell me what the sheriff is. That's not what our obligation is.
The county.
With all due respect, you have to read both statutes together, and a court would require us to read the two statutes together. You can't just take one sentence and say, I like that part, because it says may. The next part of the statute says shall, and reading them together, the shall controls.
So we
just read them together then.
So we are responsibility.
The same. It doesn't say that.
Okay. May I read this out loud?
Sure.
So this is RCW 1654020, disposition of abandoned animal by person having custody. Any person having in his or her care, custody or control, any abandoned animal as certified under RCW 1654010 may deliver such animal to any Humane Society having facilities for care of such animals or to any pound maintained by or under control or agreement with any city or county within which such animal was abandoned. If no such, this is the alternative to the may, If no such humane society or pound exists within the county, the person whom the animal was abandoned may notify the sheriff or county wherein the abandonment occurred. And then it drops down into 1654030, duty of the sheriff, sale,
sure.
Disposition.
So there is a humane society here. They may deliver it there. It says nothing about billing.
Does the humane society under that statute have to take those animals?
I think the humane society has discretion.
Okay.
Well, it says they can take them there if the city or county has a contract with them,
right?
Which is what we're discussing.
And if
right.
and we do,
if we don't,
but we wouldn't for so we wouldn't for any animals that are not taken there by us.
I think something we should consider is if in fact these animals are then given to the sheriff for disposition, what will the cost per animal be under that scenario?
That's not that we would not do that. We would arrange something with a vet. So that would be an impractical thing. That's not going to happen.
What is going to happen?
Well, first of all, let me explore this one option here, because certainly we need to follow the law. We need to be able to make sure that there's no question about any legality here. So it really has to do with billing. And when it comes to the members of the public bringing an animal to the Humane Society, at this point, whether or not they get billed for something, we will be willing, of course, to offer them this contract. And the thing is that we want to make sure that it works the way it should work. Even with that, the Humane Society, as it is, we have a contract with them now to the end of the year. So they, at the front desk, can say, I'll accept that animal. I won't accept that animal. They have the freedom to exercise discretion.
Not under the contract.
The contract, it specifically lists all the animals that they take. It's right here.
It doesn't say they shall take.
The contract requires them to take these
animals.
Can you
show me what it says there?
Yeah. Take a look at Section 3A, and it says here, Commissioner, right in here.
It says may, okay. Well, go ahead, let you read it.
It says it may be amended.
Yeah.
You read first, Commissioner, where it says duties.
Where you at?
What okay. The title, right there.
The and
title.
Then under mm-hmm. duties, it's a very long provision.
And does a duty mean it's a shall?
Duty means it's a shall. And so by agreement, and this is for many years, I should point out, they have to do these things, and they get paid to do those things.
Refers to the conditions set forth by the county under Title 8. So what was Title 8?
And Title 8 has animals in it, which uses the state law definition. Animals are broadly defined to include all these creatures.
Okay.
And, of course, you'll remember from the legislature, the wisdom of the legislature in defining animals.
Sure. When I look back over time, our previous contracts talk about stray dogs and cats. So has the... code changed.
The statute changed
to say that the county now needs to make sure that they take in a great variety of expanded categories of animals, or is it basically stray cats and dogs?
Commissioner, the statute was amended in 2011, and I'd be happy between now and next week when this comes up before you on your agenda to research that to see mm-hmm. if that statute had actually changed.
Okay, because just to offer one option, if let's say, of course we want to be able to handle the obvious here, and I think what we're talking about is some of the exceptions. If we have a contract with the Humane Society that says, yes, absolutely, you can take all stray dogs, and let's say stray dogs and cats, and if there's any other critters, then we have other provisions, made arrangements to handle those exceptions with the local vet, for instance. That would help to bring the balance to this.
So, we only have to pay for those animals which are actually delivered at the door, right? So that's
by the general public.
Well, or by animal control.
Have any problem with animal control. That is under our control.
I understand. Well, all of it under the contract is under our control. What I guess I'm getting to is...
That's the problem. It's that members of the public, we don't know what they're going to bring.
I'm getting there.
Right.
So just let me finish.
I'm listening.
You like that?
Oh.
All right. Yeah, all right, so... we can control that, which with your, you know, what you're speaking to, we can control that within our ordinance as far as what we are going to, what we consider as part of the contractual pieces that will be, you know, animals that are paid for under this, can't we?
Correct.
So we have the authority for that piece of it.
Which is our mind.
Right, and that, so on that side of it, you know, that might be a way to get us there. And like I said, we only pay for those animals that actually get delivered by somebody under this contract or any contract. So we can control what animals we're actually paying for that would get delivered.
Well, certainly, if your team delivers animals, that's completely
right.
under our control. And we got that. You can bring in any animals that we determine because we can set policy as we go and figure out if there's a new critter or a pet out there, we can add that to it and you can make the arrangements. We got it.
Paul, you...
So in an effort to have animal control be as efficient as possible, for instance, this week, out of the 7 days that we operate, 3 days I have one officer for various reasons. So I have one officer for all of the city and all of the county, 600 square miles, one officer. So it's fairly routine for my dispatcher to say to the citizen calling in, can you do us a favor? Can you safely contain the animal? Can you humanely capture it? Can you have the opportunity sometime today to deliver the animal to the shelter for us?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very routine conversation by our dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to save money mm-hmm. by having a citizen do a good deed
mm-hmm.
and take a wayward animal in under their care, not mine.
Uh-huh. Sure, which is, we want that.
Just so you know that. Well, cool. All right, but with... But what I'm hearing then is that's no longer allowed.
I think Commissioner Medor, and I don't want to speak for you, was showing some flexibility in being in having animals brought in by the public, but not every little type of animal, you know, and that's where we get into the type of animals.
You can say, and here's your record number. And they go down there, here's the animal, there's the record number. And that way you've authorized it, you've arranged it, you use your discretion, and they're able to continue that.
And
versus somebody that brings in a mouse.
So
and it says they gotta take it. It says the duty they gotta take it, and we got zinged for $200 for a mouse.
So when the dispatcher has a conversation with the Good Samaritan, they would
right.
identify the animal in some fashion, so that subsequently, when you get billed for that animal being delivered by the Good Samaritan, you can say, "Yep, we authorized that one."
And I think the hope would be is that so. We get an average cost per animal, right? That's the amount we pay as an average cost. 170 for next year, not 200, right? 170, and then 200 for the year following. The point is, how much does a mouse really cost, or a gerbil, or a hamster really cost versus a dog? And are there more efficient ways to deal with it than having them taken there? I get that. I mean, I think that's... Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Okay. So then the question would be, what, you know, flexibility do we have, and might we be able to create the flexibility either contractually or in the ordinance to be able to give ourselves the freedom to have a more efficient way of dealing with those things? I don't know what those things are exactly. I'm not Dr. Doolittle, so I just, yeah.
There is a way, actually, that I think that we can actually improve the process, and that would be that each time animal control goes out there and gets an animal or basically has a call from somebody and you assist them and tell them what to do, you would create a record. And you would say, here's the contact name, here's the address, here's the kind of animal, here's the status report on it, and it automatically generates the next, you know, record number. And you, every animal that goes there, it automatically has all that history that the Humane Society is going to have to enter anyway, and it connects that that information management, brings us into the current century here, so that when we get billing for that, we know what it was for. You can even complete the record that says, well, what happened to that animal? Well, it got adopted, it got euthanized, and it had a lot of medical problems, and finally got helped. So basically, the establishment of some kind of record that would be authored by animal control would be a ticket the ticket for us to be able to have a good way to manage these things so it doesn't get abused.
You know what's going to happen here, right?
What?
people are going to call me and get a record number and take their stuff in.
And do what? How do you get a record number then? I didn't hear that.
So the intent here is to not diminish the Good Samaritans out there and have them be burdened financially or whatever. Thank you for thinking about that. But you're going to have those people who are still going to find a way that I can't handle my Great Dane, but I'm going to claim it's not mine. I'm going to call you and say, I found this dog. Give me a record number. And you know, they're going to get the dog into us.
Yeah.
Anyway. There will always be a few people who abuse the system.
Which is a sad thing.
The sad reality is there will always be a few people who abuse the system.
And we can't fix that.
No. From a procedural point of view, Lair, are the processes and procedures that are being discussed here, record numbers, phone calls, can that discussion occur outside the contractual process?
If Commissioner Madore found it satisfactory, I think we can work on all those issues,
sure.
And that would only leave the question, does this language stay the same? And you'll have next week, I believe, to have this come before you.
And my preference would be if we can deal with it in a way that is satisfactory through ordinance and structure and the work we do, mm-hmm. Is to then have the contract be the same to base it so that those Good Samaritans who we do put on record,
I use them.
Yeah, that you were using to save us money, that we can still have them do that. And that's what this contract is.
Well, certainly in order to implement that, right. We can't just simply use this language, because you're going to have somebody bring in a batch of animals or little rodents or something, and according to this, their duty, they got to collect it, and they got to zing us for every one of those things. So this language, as it is, shows the same kind of problems that we've seen in the invoices over time. Because we're not just talking about guinea pigs. We're talking about, I've seen them on all the different invoices. I just want to make sure that we're good stewards of the money. We're talking about a lot of money that in a bad policy that's fixed the hole in the policy, and just simply being good stewards. What motivates us? I mean, it's like, am I trying to be nitpicking on this? No, I'll tell you what motivates me is that grandma who stood up in the back and says, my property taxes are too high, and can you do something about it? And incrementally, I'm thinking, you got simple things like this, and they all add up. And I remember that grandma. So I want to make sure that we have simple little fixes like this, that we take care of it. Don't let the leaks keep happening. The bulk of the work is still going to get done. We want to make sure that we have a good relationship with them. But hopefully they'll be joining with us also, because I expect they want to be good stewards too.
They
want to have the freedom to not to say, well, you know, it's really not appropriate for me to take that, the batch of rats. Well, according to this, it says you got to take it. Let's fix that.
So I have another question. Suppose we had a contract with somebody else. We're obligated only by the terms of the contract, where I'm reading this, it references Title 8 describing the animals. Title 8 belongs to us, right? So we could change that.
Certainly.
I think that's what he's alluding to.
Certainly.
So if we could change Title 8 to be more specific.
Exactly.
For dogs and cats.
That's what I was trying to get to, is that you don't have to change the language you were looking at. It's still controlled by being in accordance with those conditions set forth in County Code Title 8. That's our code.
And
that's code that we are in control of that. So regardless of what you sign here, it's what's in Title 8 that is what they're picking up and that they're responsible
for. And they contemplate changes because they say as may be amended.
Right. So that's why I was saying that it's not that language that will help get you home on this. It's the language. It's the work we're going to have to do, regardless of what ends up. The work we're going to have to do in Title 8.
So yeah, well, that sounds good, because I'm looking for a solution here, and I see that it used to say stray dogs and cats.
Right.
And anything else, I expect we would work with them, and I would say, well, you brought over something, well, or you have an arrangement with a vet for raccoons that are going rabid or something. So the Humane Society, does their main thing is to help get these animals adopted if possible, make sure they're fine. That's their strength. Let's play to their strength. Those animals that basically it says that's a wild critter and it's in bad shape and that shouldn't go to the Humane Society. That should go over to that vet because that vet can fix it or put it out of its misery. So there's different optimal solutions for this.
Exactly, Commissioner.
They're not exclusive.
Listening carefully to what you and all the commissioners have said, it is possible to come back next week, have the contract basically ready to go, but with the direction from you to review our ordinance and work on that mm-hmm. ordinance, come back and report on that ordinance to see how it can be structured mm-hmm. to get exactly what you want.
Mm-hmm. And that's Title 8, and that would amend the contract. I mean, because if we amend Title 8, it amends the responsibilities they have, whether it's dogs and cats or something else, because it's specified by our code.
Yes, and I just want to make sure that we don't... Yeah, so between now and next week, we can fix this, and because if there's some linkage between...
Not in the contract.
What I'm saying is you don't... There's no language you have to fix in the contract. The fix is in Title 8. That's the fix. Where the language you brought from the older contracts that is now... What it is now is Title 8. It just gives a reference to a county code now.
Well, that sounds good, and if we can do it that way, that would be really simple. The question is, of course we have control of what we bring. What we don't have control is what the members of the public bring. So if we change Title 8, can we specify that if members of the public bring these kinds of animals, then we do, that is something that it's a role of the taxpayer to pay for that.
Title 8
if
is the animals.
Those kind of animals, yep. Then it's a fraction of the flat rate.
Title 8 is the definition of animals, and we can adjust that definition of animals so long as we're in compliance with state law to actually be able to have more differentiation and delineation.
State law disagrees with this.
Ooh. With what?
Just state law has a different definition of animals.
Just to be really careful.
But we can say what they do with them.
I think we need to do just a little bit more research, but I think we're getting close. State law does define animals, but the code, we can look at the code carefully and report back to you how can we make the code work to get what you want.
Yeah. In other words, it's a workable policy, and it's worked pretty well so far, but it has leaks in it, and we can make it better. That's all.
One other portion that's not covered in here, and it should not be exclusive. So, for example, we were to pick up a dog that was run over by a car, that we have certain humane societies or veterinarians that we could take that animal to and have record of it and notify the people that your dog has been run over, has been taken to veterinarian Joe Blow. And you need to go over there and tell the veterinarian what to do with your dog.
For the future, we can actually look at that carefully. This contract, Humane Society, is not going to allow any changes. They've made it very clear on that point of exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
They would not accept at this point.
Well, how can I take an injured dog to a veterinarian then?
This is their position on the contract as far as exclusivity.
Well, there's nothing that I read here that is exclusive. We still have the freedom to take... You can take any animal anywhere you want to. This just says if we take it...
You
mean him?
That's all it's saying.
Which works fine.
Yeah.
But what one of the leaks here, in that really a disservice to the animals and a disservice to the taxpayer, is that you could have somebody who finds 9 feral kittens out there, and they bring them over to the Humane Society, and they are going to euthanize them, and that's 9 times $200 is $1,800 to kill 9 kittens. That's not where the Humane Society shines. Instead, and we don't have any control over that because Susie brought that to the Humane Society, and our policy can't address that. But instead, if we say that anybody who brings something to the Humane Society, that we have some mechanism that would make sure that some discretion there. Because, for instance, feral cats, feral kittens could go to the Feral Cat Coalition. And they'll make sure they're healthy, they'll clip their ears, they'll do a little thing, and they'll set them free where somebody that says, I want some mousers.
we can do, and that's where we have to look at, and where Laird would need to be looking into, can we make those kinds of determinations in our county code as to, you know, disposition and those kinds of things?
I'm talking live. This is going down now. I got 9 cats. Who makes the determination on where they go? Who makes the determination that they're feral or not?
Well, that is a problem.
And the control officer should know.
Let's not make it too complicated. Let's say you've got the feral cat coalition. Who cares about these critters? They are getting euthanized now. If you take them to the Humane Society, they are going to kill them, and it's going to cost the taxpayer.
Right.
That's easy and it's simple and it's well defined. But we have done a disservice in several ways. So what we can do instead is we can say, for anything that may be any Joe Public out there, when it comes to what you're going to bring to the Humane Society, there ought to be something there that would say it's appropriate. And that animal goes to the appropriate place, which could be another prearranged thing, or you could make it your best guess and say, well, that looks like it's wild, or it looks like it's a pet kitty, and you decide which way you're going to go. But you have an alternate way to cover that. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking I'm not there.
Well, we'll help you get there.
No. I'm not there. I'm not present in the moment when someone has 9 kittens. Susie doesn't know if the cats are feral. She doesn't know who they belong to.
Right.
She has to bring them to someone and have that someone who's a professional make a determination.
Yes.
So who is that person?
Well,
is that me?
No.
I have one officer.
We prearranged that with someone who, a vet or a feral cat coalition person.
How does Susie get a hold of them?
Well, they have an establishment. So we arrange with that. It's going to be less money than what we're doing now at $200 an animal.
No, okay, sorry, no, Susie. No, that's okay. Susie, say...
You make an arrangement.
Well, but you know something. You know this stuff. Susie, little Susie out there, doesn't know any of this. All she knows is I found kitties, and I don't know what to do with them. So then who does Susie call? Because Susie's got to call someone.
Sure.
So she's either going to look up and she's going to say, oh, okay, well, I'm going to take them to Humane Society because I don't have a dog pound and cat pound or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing she might do. Or she may call someone. Mm-hmm. And we have an animal control line, so they may call us. They may call someone else. I don't know. But so the question becomes, when Susie makes that call, who's she calling and who's making the decision as to where to take the animal, depending on what kind of animal it is?
Well, I expect if the Humane Society cares about these critters, they call the Humane Society, they're going to get somebody. Otherwise, they're closed. They're not going to be able to take them down there anyway. And the person they get on the phone is going to say, oh, okay, tell me about that. Okay, you can go here. Here's the address, and drops them off there. So it's the animal's directed to the right person because the person has the right information. In other words, we prearrange an alternate place for certain categories of animals. And the Humane Society assists with the coordination of that.
Is that a function they perform now?
Yes.
The Humane Society refers Good Samaritans to various
locations? Sure, they have fosters and all of that. We've talked about that
before.
Okay,
so they wouldn't object to that because they do it now.
All of this, however, that the dollars per animal that they have generated for us are averages.
Right.
So if all of a sudden their low-cost animals are being farmed out somewhere else, guess what? We're not going to be charged. They're going to change our rate again.
And well, but we have a 2-year contract, so if it goes up, we're still covered.
I understand, but I would like to have a long-term continuing relationship with them. So if you take away the minimums, you're going to wind up with the maximums, correct? If you take away the $17 euthanasias, at $9 a pop, and that, let's say they make $100 on those. Now all of a sudden they've got to make up the difference for that, and they're gonna raise my canine costs to $250.
And their cost just not very long ago was $50-some each, and now they're talking about $200 each, and they're talking
That was the subsidized cost, right? That wasn't their actual cost. That was the contract cost, which for the entirety of the contract has been subsidized by the Humane Society and their donors. Mm-hmm. So that $50-some-odd was not the actual cost. It was a subsidized rate.
Okay. But I assume that they still have contributors that care about that organization.
Well, we have taxpayers who care too.
Yeah,
and there's lots of taxpayers who care about their animals want to know there's a place.
Yeah, so to strike the balance there, to be able to allow so that otherwise it becomes like a for-profit mill. And we're doing everybody a disservice.
Yeah, Multnomah County Humane Society charges $450 an animal.
Okay.
So I
just for a relative.
All right, we're going.
It's okay. Let me recap a little bit.
Go for it.
You're gonna give us something. You're gonna come forward with something to redefine Title VIII.
I think we can
work together to do that. Yeah.
Okay. We'll report back to you.
The other thing I'd like to bring up is something that the animal control officer can have, and that's something that our assessor has put together with an iPad, that when they go out to a home, they have the program on the iPad, and they punch in, identify, I'm a calico cat, I picked up in this neighborhood, it's already recorded back here in our office.
Yes, we're way behind in technology and community development.
I think they put
we'll
that
get you
together.
Going. We're working through a tide mark replacement program, and we've got iPads priced and how it's all going to work.
Well, let's check with our assessor because he put that program together in a very, very short time.
He had control of his own budget. They didn't.
Well, I don't think we're talking that much.
Oh, yeah. You would not want to tie this thing into tide mark. No. You're talking about something a whole lot.
No, I think he was making the point that they have a major automation initiative underway currently, and this would simply be added on top of that.
So my point is to keep track of the animals that we pick up and keep track of the animals that people call in. So when they call in, you're here, and you would give them a number, something like that, or identification code, number, whatever, to authorize the animal to be taken to the society.
Do you have a proposal for automating the system for the officers that go out?
Well, it was wrapped up in the tide mark replacement.
Can you break out the specific costs associated with that and the benefits and see if it matches with the benefits that we're seeking?
I'm looking for somebody when they call in here and say, I've lost my calico cat. Right. Have you picked it up? And you can look at what we've done.
But I don't take those phone calls now. That's not an expense I'm born with, which is beautiful.
Well, who gets that then?
The Humane Society.
They don't call animal control?
No.
I would think that if they saw the animal control truck out in the neighborhood and they come up missing a dog or a cat, they would call us.
We get those phone calls too, but we don't. That's all the Humane Society. It's all part of their cost.
Because if they call you, Paul, you're going to say, yeah, I picked it up. I took it to the Humane Society.
I can't believe the key
question is, this contract needs to be in the hands of the Humane Society by the 14th of this month. It has to be approved by the 8th by the board. So, which means we have to give public notice that this contract, as written, will be on the consent agenda next week, and that notice has to go out tomorrow.
So with all of the work, the Title VIII work, and other automation, and other work that we have that we need to be doing, and that you need to bring back to us, and hopefully bring in ideas that we could talk about at the hearing, can we get this on the agenda to...
In other words, right now, everything works except members of the public can bring any... the animal they want. So I would suggest stray dogs or cats turned in from members of the public.
No, it's according to Title VIII.
Right.
And so the general public can come in and drop off an animal according to Title VIII.
I think that's what Lair is going to try to work out for us, is if we can get what you're after without having to make a change specifically in the contract language, instead make it in Title VIII that tells the contract what it does.
And which would be great on.
That's
after
what I'm
that,
saying. Yes.
We absolutely want to do that, but
that would be simple.
Everything is controlled over the county here, except members of the public. I want to make sure that Title VIII can say what members of the public can bring in to the Humane Society.
Yes. We'll report back on can we do that in the code.
Thank you.
That'll be black or white.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and we really need to know the answer to that before we do this.
That's exactly right.
We're going to put it on the consent agenda for the 8th?
Yes.
Next week?
Yes, sir.
And you might be able to give us something before then?
We have to.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Counting on it. Good. I'm good with that.
Thank you.
Counting on it.
Sorry it took so long. This is one of those small things. Thanks for so long.
All right.
Okay, next item
Thank
on the
you.
Agenda.
Thank you, sir. All right, we got next,
gentlemen.
Grace, yeah, Railroad, we'll Jeff. This should be like a 5-minute thing. We got good stuff on this. So.
Oh, wow.
This is yours. You got your, I have yours. This one?
There we go.
Yeah, I got it.
I think we all have this.
Hold on, Jeff's coming in. Jeff, have a seat. Blair, thank you. Paul, do you need us for anything else?
I'm here.
Thanks, Blair.
Okay, that's fine. Jeff, have a seat.
Gee, Jeff, you weren't here for the Humane Society.
No,
oh, you missed it.
Well, not to the cats and dogs to pick up along the railroad track.
All right, Commissioner Milkey is leading off on this.
Yeah.
No, I think that.
Can we frame the issue quickly?
Sure.
We've received a $675,000 grant from WSDOT for railroad enhancements, retrofits, and repairs.
And received past tense?
Yes.
Yeah, we have been awarded the grant. We do not have the funds. Okay. We have to provide WSDOT with a scope of work. We had an original scope that John Holliday submitted when we applied for the grant. Jeff Swanson, our new railroad corridor employment coordinator, took a high rail with Will Cahill.
Business card than everybody else.
Yeah. And has different thoughts about how we spend the money, and so we want to. He's already submitted a revised scope, but there was some controversy about the battleground improvements, and I think that controversy may have been solved. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jeff and Commissioner Milkey.
Yeah, the vast majority of the changes that were proposed, there was nothing, nothing to do with, but some potential for the battleground.
The hang-up was the battleground.
Right. Yeah. We were trying to get the biggest bang for the buck and to provide service and not understanding totally what Anderson Dairy was really needing. It was that they just needed the railroad car closer to their building. What was happening, we were using the outside main line because we couldn't get to their line because the siding rail was just too dilapidated to get the cars on. And they were having to very delicately attach the railroad cars with hoses. And because they make a product that food goes into, that hose cannot touch the ground. It's very, very difficult for them to put that there. If they put it on their siding, they attach to the car and it never touches the ground. Very, very simple. So we went back out there. We knew that we had some two used switches. And so we come up to look to see what we had to do on a minimal basis to provide better service to the dairy and to one bad switch that they were using to switch the engine around behind the cars. And we found a solution today to finalize that, and that was to insert one used switch up here and go directly in line to the spur and come back down here where they switch the cars and replace that with another used one.
What was the cost you're looking at on that?
About $45,000 per.
What was the original battleground estimate?
We're looking at $160,000.
So this is like and a quarter of that?
Well, we haven't got the numbers finalized yet, but it'll be less than $160,000.
So the $120,000 we can
reprogram south.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
So everybody likes that solution? The plastics company
Anderson.
And we had
so we got to win.
We had the president of the company out there with us this morning, and the locomotive crew was switching the industry.
Right. And this doesn't. And have you shown it to Battleground at all? Does this preclude? Does this preclude any future potential for a railroad academy in that along that area?
No.
Actually, we just all the dilapidated railroad that's out here in that area is just going to be bypassed.
Okay.
So everybody's good.
Sounds great. He's good. So we want to go to consent next week.
The grand bargain is back.
So we put on consent
thank
for
you,
next week.
Okay, great stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you, sir, for taking the time this morning.
Okay, related to that is the agreement with Battleground. They want to be able to sign off when it comes to Grace Avenue.
Doesn't even affect them, not even close. It's just really completely out of
but it's unfinished business.
Right.
So can we bring that forward as well?
Can we sign off on that now?
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've got all the got
Grace
Avenue,
the agreement.
We have
Jeff is going to. Do you have a staff report on that?
I'm working on one.
Okay.
They're still.
So you got that. In other words, you'll shepherd that through when you're
and is it going to come forward?
Yeah,
we're ready for it. I think
the city is still kicking around drafts of the MOU amongst themselves.
Oh. So we're waiting for them. They're not waiting for us.
So we're waiting for them, waiting for their council. Okay. To approve it.
Okay.
To approve the MOU to do what?
Their version of the draft MOU. Basically, what
this
they
all the right
to
right
do is cede this yeah. part of the right of way to
yeah.
them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I thought we already okay. If they're monkeying with their own MOU, that's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, if it's like Commissioner said, if it's in their house, cool. Yeah. We just don't want them waiting on us.
Yeah, yeah they're not waiting on us.
We're just gonna give it to them, right? What yeah. they need there. Yeah,
yeah. Just yeah, we'll just give it to them so they can build the road.
Sure. Okay,
that's great,
outstanding.
Good work, Jeff. Thank you.
In that MOU, do you think it's necessary to make an understanding of the parking space
on the north end?
I think we could just put that in there.
Yeah.
Okay. They also had a trail on the east side of the tracks. Are they still wanting to do that?
Yes, they are, but we should put that in a separate document.
Should we?
Why?
I think it's separate.
Because they're disconnected.
And it's a wetland.
But they're willing to do all the work, and it ends up connecting a trail that we won't have control over.
And not after I go tell the Corps about it.
Well, and frankly, and from my perspective, again, let's all remember the history of this. Battleground didn't want to do this alignment. Battleground wanted to do a different alignment. We asked them over and over and over again until finally I had to go ask them directly to please change the alignment of Grace, which they said, okay, we'd be willing to do this, but we need the stuff on the south end. We'd like those parking spaces in the future, and we want your blessing for us to build, to pay for it ourselves, to build this trail.
Okay, so
it's
so
all part of the same agreement from Battleground standpoint.
Correct.
Our jurisdictional partner, it is absolutely part of what they had asked us
yes,
for.
Yes, sir, I understand your point, and I personally have no objections to having the trail included in the current MOU.
I do.
You have an objection to that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, then what if they say,
dogs, and cats don't mix with railroads? And that's what this is, the working railroad.
There's a master plan
We have double sidewalks on the new road. And this doesn't connect to anything. It'd be just like that mile track that we have.
No.
A couple miles up the track that cost $1 million. It doesn't go anywhere.
No, it would. It would connect to Battleground Village to the stuff on the south.
There's no walking deal down here by the village.
That's the point. That would create the walking down there.
Sidewalks
don't go all the way down to the village. This trail would.
The current MOU only addresses ceding this piece of right-of-way to them.
The whole new road project is a winding, it goes all the way and has sidewalks on the wall and bicycle lanes all the way down there.
You know what I would suggest? Tom, you did really good to go out there and to meet with them and be able to end up with this, and you made it so much better. What we haven't done is the other side of that, for you to be able to go, I think you'd be successful in coming up with insights that only can happen, like the process that you modeled here for us. So I would suggest that
I just want to know how they're going to make that work. But
they've shown it to us.
I went out there, Mr. Cahill got out of there and he says, "I'll act as your safety man while I'm here." And he put his hat on, he has a reflective jacket because you're not allowed to be out there in that railroad right of way, without a safety officer.
There are lots of trails. He made that
very clear to me when I got out there.
Would you be willing to go ask Battleground how they're going to make it work? Because they showed me how they were going to make it work and the benefits of having that trail. And for them, this was definitely a part and parcel to them being willing to, their council being willing to sign off on a huge change to the alignment of Grace Avenue from what they had originally thought they were going to do, and that we were getting in the way of.
When you and I met with them, that was a while ago with Scott, who was going to apply for the grant.
Yes.
I understand Tom's concern, and is that a lot of people get killed every year because they walk on railroad tracks and all, and what I'd like people to do is to consider what's the difference between this here and the danger you normally find alongside of a regular railroad track. One, that's the end of the line right there, and these are going back and forth, like 5 miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to have 60-mile-an-hour trains running through there. So certainly the danger there, I was wondering about that same thing when I went to Battleground Lake and took that 1 mile, like it was over before I started kind of $1 million trail. But if it's a 5-mile-an-hour kind of a train at the end of the line, does that help to minimize the danger you're concerned
for? No, I think we should have a risk management people talk about it.
Well, people are going to use.
All of a sudden, you're putting something on our right of way, we become liable. Mm.
Well, don't we have a master plan for 33 miles of trail that is adjacent to the rail line for 99% of its length?
Yes. And Battleground
along
is talking about
rail. Along
them
the rail.
Paying for this and us not paying for this. So instead of deciding to say, well, let's do this, I feel like it would be really good because I want you to be able to feel like now I have this insight and maybe
It's a wetland. It's water in there.
Would you go talk to
them? I can't imagine why you would put a pipe in there.
This is the city of Battleground. Go ask them, please.
I can't fill in a wetland out here. Why is the city of Battleground
Their city. This is their jurisdiction.
Everything else.
This is in their city, and it's trying to connect their downtown with Battleground Village.
So they're
would you at least
from
please go?
Water laws?
No, of course not.
Well, I don't think
can
so.
You ask them how they're doing it though? Because they've already talked to them.
No, Scott Sawyer already came in and give a presentation, but
put
it might
grade at both ends.
Actually,
what happens?
Tom has a valid point.
You have liability.
You
here.
Have to talk to them. They
if
saw
someone it. Gets into that pipe.
It's not true.
Gets into that pipe.
So
it'll be graded on both ends.
Okay, well, listen. Tom has a valid point in that it's wetlands. It's going to be a challenge. No, wait.
It's not. You got to know the geography and the topography of it. Hydrology.
I don't even remember if Scott applied for the grant. I mean, we got to go check.
Okay.
We'll find out.
Keep going. Sorry. Commissioner.
Yeah, they're not combined.
Okay. What I'm not saying is do it one way or do it the other. What I'm saying is if there are challenges there, that Battleground will deal with it responsibly. They have to follow the law. It would be they're volunteering to solve this problem responsibly. They won't get a permit to do it unless they solve those problems.
Yep.
And so the solution, if it's doable, they'll solve that problem. But in order for us to get there, I think it's important that, Tom, if you're really interested in this, that you go out, you spend time with the Battleground staff there, and make sure that you see the picture and maybe consider if there's other options. Or how are they going to, if we do end up building the rest of these trails all along the track, how do we stitch this part together? Because we don't want a gap in the middle of this because of this one decision. So let's wait until, Tom, you can do what you did for that, you did for this.
I'd like to see how they're going to do that. And then we need to know what our liability is on this thing.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and you know, those are valid concerns.
So that's inside the city. Are we exempt from stormwater rules on that?
No, and they would have to deal with that. That's the point.
Okay, because I have other issues along the railroad where they've deemed it wetland because...
So those are valid concerns.
I agree.
And I encourage you to play the hero on that like you did on this. And go out there and make another.
You think that's going to be a hero?
Or you can just be a commissioner. Don't worry about being a hero.
Well, he found a better way.
Heroes become martyrs.
Find a better way.
Don't worry about that.
To be clear, the MOU will not be on the agenda for next Tuesday because Battleground is having internal discussions. But, but the scope of work to WashDOT will be.
Correct.
As agreed upon here.
Yes.
Okay.
Jeff, you got what you need?
Yes.
Could you give that to Tina for me, please?
Yes, sir.
Onward and upward. 2.0, Commissioner Reports. 2.1. Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, can I jump the chain here, Chair?
I don't know. Chair is trying to run the meeting here. What would you like to jump in on?
Well, I have a quarterly invoice from CVTV, okay to pay.
Oh, well, we need to talk about that. So when you want it to talk about it, we'll talk about it.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, so I'll set that.
Mr. Administrator, you were wanting to address that, so of course, you know. Go ahead. Excited to talk about it. So.
Oh, CVTV. Yeah.
CVTV.
Oh, I thought it was FETV.
Yeah, it's
how much is it?
It's $108.961. It's a normal quarterly.
Yeah,
it's
on that one. Okay, all right.
Good to go on that. Thank you. I apologize for interrupting,
sir. That's all right. You're excited to get moving, and I like your enthusiasm
in the back.
Pushing forward. It's good. Commissioner Reports, Woodland Chamber and Visitors Bureau budget request for 2014. Kelly?
Make it really brief for you. Request was $5,000. I think you considered it last week with the idea of finding out more background about what we did last year. So for 2013, we funded $2,000, came out of countywide, i.e. general fund. The other question was, could it be paid through the TPA fund, which is in the hands of the Convention and Visitors Bureau? Their executive committee met last week, discussed it, and they said no.
Really?
They said no.
And they have like a big fund balance.
Yeah,
why didn't did they say why?
Like $100,000.
Yeah, they got plenty of money.
It's a hotelier-controlled board. The TPA is generated by the hoteliers, and they petitioned to essentially impose that fee on their lodgers. And they felt that, well, I wasn't at the meeting, but my understanding is that they felt that the amount of money that they have is generated by them, and so it is a Clark County-based TPA, not a Woodland-based TPA. A very small slice of Woodland is in Clark County, about, I think, well, fluctuates between 85 and 90 residents.
Is it that small?
Yeah.
Wow, that's
really
a tiny slice of
Horseshoe Lake, just a little bit of that. And,
I've been calling it half a city, and I guess it's, what, 10% of a city?
Yeah.
It's quite small.
Yeah.
I think we may have some public works.
Okay,
right.
So we're not funding any of the rest of the chambers for 2014.
I think it truly has. You know, Woodland is seems to be more a part of Clark County than Cowles County, just the way it operates.
Mm-hmm. Axel never cared about it when he was.
Yeah, and,
what?
You talk about promoting tourism.
You're to the mountain.
If you look at how it pulled down there.
When you have a tourism facility right there at the base of the road to come in from the south end of Mount St. Helens, mm-hmm. and all that park up there, it's disappointing that they can't see it here, and they have all that money and doesn't want to share it. But I think that we should, I'd recommend that we go ahead and do, give them the $5,000 to.
Really? Because we've stopped, I mean, just be consistent with all the other chambers. You're going to wonder, how come you gave them?
Well, not to the chambers, for the tourism.
Do they have a tourism bureau?
It's huge. Yeah, it's right there, along the
chamber. Yeah, so
for them, the tourism bureau is a subset of the chamber.
Right, it has to go through the chamber.
So you're not saying for the chamber, you're saying tourism.
Right.
Yeah, so Woodland Visitors Information Center.
Yeah, and that's what we'd be very, very specific about that. Because it really is a
so specifically
huge.
To the
in fact, North County, North County EMS.
I'm sorry, Commissioner.
North County EMS is so wrapped into this. North County EMS goes all the way into Mount St. Helens and in the Skamania. So it's huge, and the tourism up there, it's amazing the tourism traffic that comes from all over. In fact, here we just had it last week.
Well, we did a
report, and they came all the way from California, and we had to go rescue these people. But gives an example of how that ties in here. And those people were staying here in Clark County.
All right.
So, because we have more options
okay
of places
for the
to stay.
Side of it?
I'll give you the third vote, whichever you guys want to go.
That's fine. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay, very good.
Specifically for the tourism, but we got to make sure it's clear that it's not for general chamber activities. This is specifically as a tourism activity, which we do fund in Clark County as well. It's just unfortunate that the our tourist visitors bureau down here isn't funding it.
That's $5,000 out countywide.
I would encourage that we keep the conversation going. I can't believe, I know I was in the legislature, we promoted and pushed tourism in Southwest Washington. We have a monument that's worldwide, and we talk about the different things that brings money into our communities and whatnot. And, I probably should bring back to the board more of those reports from North County EMS.
That'd be cool.
As to how busy they are just rescuing people and where they're connected to. Yeah.
When they had the big trail run up there when we were hunting, when we were bow hunting, they had that big like cross country 50 mile trail thing. Yeah. There were a lot of out of state plates, not just Oregon, but further than that, that came up there up just south of the mountain for that.
So I was really surprised as well. There's one that they talked about, the rescue.
What?
It was a mother and daughter thing that was a bonding thing. And they were able to contact through a cell phone, and when they were calling in for help, they could hear the daughter in the back saying, "We're going to die."
Not to laugh at that. That's sorry.
So it's
a heck of a way to bond.
I know it. They got a bonding experience they never had before.
Yeah. All right. So we got that. The 2.2 political sign regulations.
Okay, Axel.
We got an issue at Andreessen, southeast corner of Andreessen and Haddon.
No,
political science.
This was political science, political due to Commissioner Mielke asking a question about the checklist and what we hand out to the county.
There was a note that was put at the southeast corner of Andreessen and Patton saying, don't put signs up here.
Oh. No, I went back and read it again with a closer. It said, don't attach to this fence.
Right.
Oh.
Then that's but yet we haven't done the same sign at Andreessen and 88. Oh, we do?
And people are
still
there. It is located there.
So then there was one other issue on political signs. And one time before, a couple of years ago, you shared with me that then Chairman Mark Bolt signed on to saying that we couldn't place signs on county property. Remember that?
Every year, whoever the chair of the board is asked to sign a form letter that speaks to all political candidates that want to use signs to become elected.
You sign the form.
So you probably signed it at some point.
I don't think he did. I think because I told him it was that form, and he's like, "No, I don't know what you're talking about."
Well, whoever the chair of the board is, there had to have been an election the year that you were chair. Maybe you got really lucky. it's a form letter, hasn't really changed in years and years and years, and it tells people please abide by the code. Yeah. And here's where you can go to look at the code. And here are some basic rules we'd like you to follow, and there's a picture of see one of these things.
So but it doesn't say you can't put it in.
And it does say at the top, we discourage.
There's one, and you don't have it here. It was much shorter than this. It was signed by then Commissioner Mark Bolt. And it said that we could not put signs on county property.
I think actually was talking over
the top paragraph alludes to that. It doesn't say you can't, but it does say we discourage. So maybe that's what you were reading.
Putting the 4x8s out there.
But if you insist on doing it, you can't obstruct the vision of motorists.
That's very, very clear. Yeah. So I think we do understand that people can place signs on our right of way.
Well, they have to. They have to submit this application, and by doing so, we're giving them the right to do that.
So the application is something new. We've never done that before.
Oh, no.
We've done it a while.
Oh, no.
I've signed it a couple of campaigns.
I've never signed it in 15 years.
I've come up to your office and made you sign it.
that was 2 years ago.
I ain't saying sign nothing.
Commissioner, go ahead.
Yeah. I would think that we have our policy clear. It says you can do this, but you can't do that. Mm-hmm. If you say we discourage this, then basically you give an advantage to the most extrovert, aggressive ones, and the ones that are the most law abiding and say, I'm not going to do that because I'm really nice. And so we're rewarding the wrong behavior.
2 feet right in front of somebody's. Yeah.
So I would.
Don't even start.
So where does it say discourage? What does that say? You probably ought to make a call on that.
Right. I mean, maybe we don't need to put the discouraged part in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we have placed diagrams and all that. So, like, for future versions of that, I mean, maybe just strike that aspect of it. Because,
I think line of sight is very, very important.
It's very important. Totally agree.
And I don't... Have we ever had our fences blow over because someone attached to them?
I'm sorry.
Have we ever had a fence blower
because someone attached their campaign sign?
No.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm attached to it.
So we end up, I want to make sure that we make progress here. So was there a decision on the discouraged part? Or we just strike the whole paragraph?
For next version of it.
Kelly has something.
Well, what I would suggest is that you at least get some feedback from legal about that, because there may be a First Amendment issue when it's county public right of way.
We're saying take out the discouragement part, so we would be giving people more First Amendment.
Oh, you're
freedom.
Allowing it, not participating.
Yes, you may. No, because we allow it now. It's just we're saying, well, we'd really rather you didn't, but I think Commissioner Medora's just saying, well, either you are or you aren't. So. Yeah, they're allowable, however, do not obstruct.
Yeah, so, yeah, we allow, we don't allow. So, in other words, why don't we strike the discouraged part and give you that and
progress.
So that
and emphasize line of sight, safety.
It's in there.
That's all in there. If you would have signed the pledge, then you would have known that.
If you put it in a roundabout, and the decoration is...
Is there a picture of a roundabout in there?
And the decoration is taller than your sign. You surely are not obstructing.
I'm actually not being facetious. They should probably have like a roundabout picture in there.
Given the proliferation of roundabouts.
Yeah. Guilty.
Yeah.
I finally found a good use of those roundabouts.
Maybe if I can add something to that. I did have a conversation with Steve Schulte today because it would be deferred to Public Works, right. The question of whether you need the signs.
They're the ones who rip your signs out if they
don't
like
opinion it. Is that roundabouts are actually more complicated for drivers than a simple signal where they're just simply going green or red.
That's what I
think. He said definitely not in the middle of a roundabout. You really don't have pedestrian access designed to get into the middle of a roundabout, and he doesn't want any more distraction for people who are already dealing with traffic.
So then for a future version, then Public Works would be requesting that we not have signs allowed in roundabouts.
Exactly. Or along the perimeter. I asked him about that, and he said it would be just as distracting around the perimeter.
If it's on the outside or inside,
seriously.
If it's not designed for pedestrian access, so someone actually has to jaywalk to get into the middle of it, I get that. But if there's pedestrian access around it, you're not necessarily just putting signs up for the drivers. You're putting up for pedestrians, drivers going around. And so long as it's not in the line of sight, then it's fine.
Four-sided, four-way,
ten feet from curb's edge.
There you go.
By definition, if it's on the outside of a roundabout, it can't be in the line of sight.
The issue we had this last election season with the roundabout was some signs on the inner circle. I don't know how to draw this.
If Tom tries to do it again, then just pull him out.
Mine sign was smaller than the decorative stone. It was on the inside. But shorter.
I'm not much of an artist.
Shorter than the decorative rock.
Actually, that's a
it says 3 feet.
That is very nice. Yeah.
I'm not much of an artist. But so what you're saying is that they're fine out here. And I'm saying, okay, well, as long as they're 10 feet from the curb's edge, fine. Okay. So the ones that we were talking about.
Well, question there. Are the fences 10 feet from the curb?
Lots of times there aren't even fences.
There's no fences.
Yeah.
There's three roundabouts at once, 36 or 38 Avenue out where I live. They just finished them, and they've got fences around there. I just wonder is that because we don't want to say, oh, you know, you can't take it down because it's only 8 feet.
You're the policy guys, but. You know, you're going around a roundabout, and all of a sudden, hey, look at all these signs, and there's enough
basically
going on in a roundabout.
What it would
already.
Do is it would put it on the other side of the sidewalk, so it wouldn't be on the street side of the sidewalk. It'd be on the other side of the sidewalk.
Oh, it's on the fence, which is way.
So ten foot was right to here, right?
You'd have room to put on the other
right.
Side
so now you're in the middle. You're in the middle of
code is like at least 6 feet.
You're in the shrubbery. In other words, you're not going to want to put it there.
In other words,
yeah,
the signs.
Yeah, if the car comes down here, they could see it.
4x4x4.
No, no,
the line of sight, man. Right there.
They put yard signs in the
four,
middle.
4x8.
Never mind. But
are you running again? Is this even a pertinent question?
I'm getting ready.
I saw the spray paint, man. He's got his freshener ready.
Well, you saw it. I'm all set up.
Not at all. No. Well, we did.
Talking about it.
We did make one change as far as like for the next version of this. Take the discouraged out. Sure. I think the question then is because roundabouts are a real issue. Saying we probably should have something clear in there that says on the inside of the roundabout where there is no official pedestrian access that they shouldn't be doing.
So would you like us to come back with some roundabout language?
Do we need roundabout language?
Yeah, I think we better. Because I'm looking for the loophole.
The answer is
good spot for a sign.
I think for the outside, it's already covered. You're fine. You put them on the outside. Yep. When it comes to the inside, you got two choices. You can put something that's small there, like a yard sign, or nothing at all. And of course, it's which way you want it.
See, I'd rather have nothing
else. It says here.
Because there's no pedestrian
shorter,
access.
3 feet.
But there's no pedestrian access, so you can't legally get in there.
Yeah, I can.
How?
Walk across the street.
That's jaywalking. That's illegal.
They're never that busy.
Doesn't make it legal.
Or maybe I'll just pull my truck on the inside there and do it.
The truck?
I wanted to walk across the street.
Throw them out on the lead line. All right. All
right. So,
we'll bring you back some draft language.
Yeah, bring back a picture.
Right. Pictures, diagrams, all right.
Yeah, go ahead and supply him the sign for his picture.
If I had my choice, I'd really rather not put up any signs at all. I don't have a choice.
Yeah, that's very true. No, that's absolutely
so popular,
true.
He doesn't need signs.
No, man. Signs are one of the necessary evils of running Clark County.
So remove the discouraged
it's gone.
Paragraph.
Yeah.
And throw some language at you and see if it sticks.
Keep less than 3 foot in there in the roundabout.
The only question has to do with on the inside of roundabout.
Correct. Got it.
Should you allow yard signs or not?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, right. It says less than 3 foot tall. But if my decoration in there is 10 foot tall, why would my sign have to be so short?
Well, the issue is more about, like, from the public works standpoint, they're saying as you're going around that roundabout, if I'm looking to the inside at a sign, people are
you
merging
better be
in.
Looking to see where that guy's coming
that's
in.
That's the problem, because they're merging in from the right? And you get people coming on. So if I'm looking in at somebody's political sign and somebody's coming yielding in,
I could only hope they're looking at my sign.
And they get in a wreck, and then they're going to hate you for that.
So
on
the graph of you got 8 foot, you got nothing. I'm between nothing and yard sign.
All right, so give us a couple options on that. Come back to us.
Well, okay. So those are the options.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, come back with, like, give us the pros and cons from public works or whatever. That way we can move on. We've talked a lot about that. And all right. So next on our
3.3
is, first we have commissioner reports. You're jumping right to your reports. And I like that. I appreciate that. But we have commissioner reports.
You skipped right past this.
Yeah, I know. Just skipped over us. Commissioner Melky.
No respect. I got to get through all this other garbage that they gave me. I don't have very much. There was no. We already talked about that in executive session. We still have something coming forward for the kennels, the new kennel ordinance.
Yes,
I got something from Marty. The language.
Yeah.
It's so you've got the language in your inbox, and that's coming very soon. It's again, it's just the soundproof language, and it's the residency requirement.
We made changes on the letter to the wineries the other day, and I was requesting that they try to be in compliance by the end of October instead of the middle of November, because
we already said
all they had to do was make application.
So I signed my copies of it, and we said November 15th. What I asked Marty specifically on that is, I said, if we moved it from November 15th to end of October, would that change the ability to get these folks in compliance by springtime, which is when the season starts up next year? He said no. So giving them a couple extra weeks to get in compliance with it won't affect our ability to get them in compliance when we really need them in compliance.
Yeah, all they have to do is apply.
Well, but we want them done by spring. We want them done with their process by spring.
Okay. Sorry, Jim. Coffee carts.
Axle.
Espresso stands.
Yeah.
That is coming to you via the second part of the biennial code amendments with Jan.
Like next week?
Well, I don't know if it's that soon, but I know biennial code amendments are coming up, and they just wanted to wrap it in with those because that was...
With Fifth Plain Creek, and there's a few others, whenever that comes.
So you will consider a new espresso stand code with the biennial code amendments meeting, whenever that is.
Yeah.
And is it simple, straightforward? Are we getting there? Are you feeling good about it?
I thought it was pretty good the first time.
Good.
I heard a whole bunch about the new attendance policy, but I haven't seen it yet. But I missed it.
Oh, the HR attendance policy.
Okay, I'll grab it off the bulletin board, and I'll make a copy for you when we're done.
That's all I got.
Commissioner?
Question on the TIFs to make them more flexible. Is that going to be part of this the process? When should that happen? Or is that already?
You mean the parks?
PIPs. I'm sorry. Did I say
PIPs?
Yeah, that's all right.
PIPs. I've dogged Chris Horner in that. He's under great load. He owes me an answer, and I'll get that answer for you. It should be a very, very quick and simple thing.
Yeah. Well, why don't we?
Right.
And when I say we, the one who does all the homework here is Axel.
Yeah.
Axel, why don't you get a copy of that code, redline it. And then, because it should be really quick and easy, and then walk it down there and say, hey, Chris, how's this look? And you say, oh, it looks good, or no, I'm going to have to work on that. And see if we can get her done.
And if there's someone else other than Chris, that can do it,
Either Chris or Lori
or Lair, one of them down there can take a look at it.
Get her done. Because every week that goes by
fair enough.
Is making the problem worse.
Yep. Okay. Agreed. What else? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Do-overs. Point of clarity. We are, Laird's going forward with the new verbiage to have on the consent agenda next week, authorization for you to sign after we clear the So we have to have it on the consent agenda for next week.
Correct.
The contract.
Time, yeah.
The contract.
Yes. Not the code. The code.
The authorization to sign it.
Yes.
Before the 15th.
Correct.
Yeah. Because we still have to look at it and make sure that they're going to accept it and that we don't have other alternatives.
In between now and then, I'll work with them work with the Humane Society so that they can partner with us on this, get some goodwill going.
Yeah, but
that would be great.
We're moving in that process. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
No more do-overs.
All right. Commissioner Medora?
I'm working on a whole bunch of things behind the scenes, and none of them need attention right now at this board time.
Okay. Only things I have, updates on the one pager that we're working off of, Northeast 179th interchange replacement.
This is a newer one.
Thank you, sir.
Shorter.
Axel's been working with PIO as well as, we've got information from the business owners in the area, from Killian, who has the major commercial project at 179th. It should be ready for prime time by Monday when the legislature has their listening session. Piece is done.
Good.
The other two pieces, though, that first piece came from WASAC. This is, and Mark, there's a copy for you, too. This is what WASAC came up with and is asking commissioners who are going to the listening sessions to at least look through and kind of hopefully incorporate into the statements, because they're trying to get a consistent message coming from all 39 counties about the priorities for counties within any new revenue package and with any reform package, the things that counties would be concerned with. So I just give that to you.
Can we clarify that? RTC the other day, you went over and talked to... moving that
Bill Wright, yes.
94th,
yes.
93rd.
Yes. And so that's the third piece of it. So the third piece of it is, I told them I will be there on Monday to be speaking, for 179th at the very least, and incorporating the WASAC priorities of, what counties need on this. But what I also am 100% willing to hand out is and make sure they have as well is, other regional priorities such as SR-14 from I-205 to 164th, mm-hmm. and kind of using the regional priority list as well, but I'm not sure what regional priority list to use, frankly.
Well, let them know that we're all three of us interested in a new crossing.
Okay.
And that we're being proactive to engage our public in the process, but please don't.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
You know, I wouldn't. But what I might suggest that I could say, and this is something I told them during the session, is if you're not interested in funding the interchanges or crossing that have been proposed, then you're going to do several rounds of gas tax increases. That's what they've talked about. Is they've talked about three specific separate tax increases, not all at once. And so earmark, identify out year gas tax increase for something to help Southwest Washington, whether that be, some crossing, something, so that we can be assured that our money isn't going to just go up to Seattle or Spokane and leave us forever. So that was, and I didn't, that was kind of the general pitch I made to them during the session. I don't know if there's some sort of something
I do have something to say on that. Two things. Terms and what's the word? Cleanup, basically. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the terms first. If we're going to add a new gas tax, some kind of extra gas tax, there's two ways to handle that. The irresponsible way, which is rush to the bank and say, how much is that going to bring in? And borrow it all up front and blow it all up front. That was stupidity.
We always do that. We pay the interest for 30 years.
Yeah, and that's mortgaging the future to the today. Max out your credit card and you're paying on it. That's why we're paying 67% of every dollar now on nothing but debt service. And we got no money to build anything. So if they do a gas tax, that revenue stream should be providing for our projects, not go borrow it and pay debt service. That's, to me,
okay.
If you're not going to mortgage your future, you're going to invest in your future, that's the most responsible way to do it. So that's the first thing. Are you okay with that?
I'm happy to run that line of logic with them. I will say, the two problems with that is the first problem is that the legislature likes to be able to have project lists because the legislature wants to be able to go home and say exactly what I just said that they should do, which is you got to go tell your constituents they're getting something for their money. So for them to be able to come back and say, we're going to get this built, whatever this is, or this or that, or you know whatever it may be, is a big thing for legislatures in general, and certainly has been a better way to sell tax measures to the electorate when it goes to the voters. So they are more successful when they say, we have a project list, here's what you'll get for your money, than if they say, we're going to figure out what we can get over time, and maybe we'll build, and we'll build it as we can. Hasn't been as good a pitch politically. I'm happy to run that line, but I just don't know that, I don't know how far we get with the legislature on that. And I'm happy to back off of that whole line.
Let me share something.
As a former legislator.
We have not done all the projects with the 9.5 cent gas tax yet.
And you know the project list.
And we spent all the money.
No, the money just is coming in, and that's how it's timed out as we make that.
Yeah.
The money's collected from the 9.5 cent.
Right.
What's more important before they ask for a gas tax is that they address the fact that they, in the early 1990s, they have just paid off that 3 cent gas tax, and I want to know if that's going to go for the remaining debt service or a new project list. Mm-hmm. They never come back and told us that.
Nope.
One, they have never done reforms.
And that's in the WASAC package, and I'm convinced that the Senate will not move forward with revenue unless reforms occur, which is good.
I believe we're right, and it's about time we've done that.
I agree.
There was a request 12 years ago.
Totally agree.
To this day, we have not accomplished any of those. I want to go forward on the project for the 179th. They need to get off the dime of a roundabout there. It's going to be a commercial.
That's us.
Exit.
And that's like the latest, like the pictures Jeff Mies is working with. There are no roundabouts in any of the materials that we will be presenting that are in any of it. So we're all good as far as that. We're all on the same page.
I know they're a good place to put signs, but they don't work very
well. I understand.
So I may stay away from the fund, like how they use their funds piece of it, but I mean, because what I would be telling them is more about, less about how they spend their money and more about if you're going to raise the gas tax, and this is a WASAC thing, you got to reform it first because every dollar you spent, too much of that dollar is going to non-project related things because of the inefficiencies we have in our system. That would be one, and then the other piece would be funding projects in our region, like 179th, not touching really on crossing stuff, unless you want me to say, generally, we all agree we need to do something on a crossing, and then leave it at that.
It's premature for us to designate funds for a crossing.
I agree with
until
that.
We figure out what we're going to do, but
totally
give, at least give them a heads up that we have a future here,
right,
when we need something to relieve our traffic.
So what do you think? What I might say then is something to the effect of, if you're going to be raising the gas tax, don't spend it. Don't spend it all before don't spend it all up front because we will have needs. We will have
designate a crossing
right,
for us, but not light rail.
Fair enough. But this designating fund, just don't spend it all before you can meet our needs.
Yes, and okay. So the reform really is also including how our Department of Transportation does business.
That's one of
the whole nonsense of them handing out. This classic example of how they this turn this into no bids, no accountability, no transparency, going through the sham of pretending to get all these thousands of meetings, and all they're doing is say next, and they throw it away when they're done. That kind of form needs to be fixed.
Totally agree.
So
and that is in in the reform package that WASAC wants us to support.
I'd like to be able to see that reform package.
It's in there.
It's in
the,
here?
Yeah. The, so what they have in there
just going to be five. I don't remember.
Oh, there's a launch now. It's cool.
Okay, because there are other states. They do a really good job.
Totally agree.
When it comes to building infrastructure, and we are one of the most expensive states when it comes to bureaucracy.
Don't disagree. I totally don't disagree. So this it gives you a basic issue paper and some of that, the funding priorities, and then behind the funding priorities, and a lot of the funding priorities is don't spend all the money, we need flexibility, we need funds at the local level to be taking care of maintenance and operation of the system, and we have the majority of the state transportation system. And then we have the 2014 transportation reforms that came from the majority coalition caucus, and then the breakdown from WASAC of, you know, these are the actual reforms that were in the legislation and both the House Senate.
Okay, I'll for that.
So, yeah, it's all, and Gary Rowe is the one who put together and did a pretty darn good job.
Great.
With that. So that's, so, okay. So I think I have my marching orders as far as Monday. Anything else you want me to touch on for the listening session piece of it?
One of the things we never got there, and we had requested to adhere to prevailing laws.
Prevailing wage is in here.
Was it there? I didn't see it.
Prevailing wage.
To allow us to recognize one or the other.
Yep. The prevailing wage, Senator King is like big on that. Senator King really has been hammering on it, and he uses the example. There was a conference call with him for Fuse, and Senator King was in there talking about how the prevailing wage for, I think it was a plumber, the prevailing wage for a plumber went from like $20 to $70.
And truck driver is another one.
Yeah, and he just talked about the how ludicrous it was that, you know, how they are using multiple levels of prevailing wage, and that we at least have to open the conversation. It is going to, and I think Burgess would tell you, it will be a very difficult conversation to have, and I don't know how much
ground they'll make.
Yeah, but
we're not limiting, we're not reducing union scale.
Understood.
We're trying to say, please let me follow the federal or the state prevailing wage laws, because the paperwork is going to cut in half. Because many people bid on projects, they take into consideration all the requirements that's required by all three governments that they have to answer to.
So. Understood. I mean, it makes perfect sense, but you know how difficult of a conversation that is at the state level.
It is, but I think we're not skirting it. I mean, if they want to say, you know, state, fine, but we still have to adhere to the federal law. But if we have federal money, why don't we just follow the state prevailing or federal prevailing wage?
Well, and a lot of it is how the regions are created as well, because you get these rural areas that are subject to Portland's, like Skamania. You talked to Skamania was on the conference call, and they were talking about how a lot of their wage scale is based on the Portland market, and they're like, we're Skamania County. I mean, we're in the rural area here. You know, it's not. Mm-hmm. We're not on the same wage scale. We shouldn't be. But anyway,
I do have something, and that is, I want to have just a very friendly conversation about Thursday, this CTRAN meeting. Mm. Okay, and so I don't want to challenge you or debate with you or anything like that. I just want to do. So I feel like for us to be able to be on the to have. To understand each other, I invite you today to help me understand, Steve, what you're thinking. I think Tom and I both expected you to join with us in on this vote that said, on this, rather than sign the contract, to wait for the election, because I thought that you wanted the people to have a vote and that we were going to pay attention to that. What were you thinking?
So, as a precursor to any, so I've said my piece. I said exactly what I did and why I did it on my Facebook page, and you can check it out at any time because it's public. I'm trying to find my words
four.
Here.
Hold on, comes down to a vote. Just the vote.
I get it. And what I'm trying to find my words is to say this in the most respectful way possible. The discourse has been incredibly uncivil since Thursday. The threats of, you know, and the accusations of, you know, not only just breaking trust, but breaking oaths of office and, you know, and malfeasance. Those are legal claims. Those are claims that go beyond the pale of civil discourse. Those are not civil. They are attacks. And they've come from you. And so I'm happy that I would love to have a civil discourse about the issues of it. But it can only come through a respect for with a baseline understanding and a baseline respect for the fact that we make decisions based on the best information we have. We all make information or make decisions on the best information we have, and in our best interpretation of how to represent this community, and that may differ. But it can't. I can't have a civil discourse or explain myself if I'm explaining myself on the record for the purposes of someone who's trying to charge me with malfeasance. Does that make sense?
Any objection and really just feeling of all of those negative responses are a response to a decision that you made. I just want to go back to
but they're personal attacks. They're attacks on my integrity. They're not attacks on the information. They're not a conversation about the issues or the reasons for voting anyway on any issue. They are attacks on, they're personal attacks. And that's why I can't have a civil discourse and that's about personal attacks. I mean,
this is not about that. This is really going back to say, this is the opportunity, Steve, to have for you to be able to share in a friendly manner. Why did you vote? Why did you change your vote? I mean, you did sign that the condition of approval was any means of spirit behind that is that people are going to get a vote. You and I talked on the phone when you were running for election last time. You remember that conversation? Mm-hmm. And you gave me your word that people will get a vote. And I'm not holding that up. I'm not condemning you with that. But I'm asking you, can you help me understand what changed your mind?
Let me think. I can answer you right now, but I'm not going to. But I will. Let me think about that a little bit.
All right.
Let me let that settle for just a little bit. I appreciate you asking. I appreciate you asking in a civil way. There's so much rhetoric flying right now about this. It's hard for me to sort out what is a real question and what is a political agenda. And that's what I need to get. I just need to sort through. Because the political agenda is I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to use whatever you say. I'm going to use it against you with the people who we both represent, or ultimately with the electorate in a political fashion. That's one possibility. The other possibility is we are actually just discussing as colleagues, how'd you come to that? And then I say how I came to it, and I say, well, how'd you come to it? And then we discuss that, and then that's that. But we're not using it in some sort of political or legal fashion to try to condemn or eviscerate the other. And I haven't figured out exactly which it is you're doing. And so what I need to think through is what I believe as to what, you know, what are you actually asking me and why? Because based on all of the comments I've seen and heard since Thursday, it's hard for me to believe that you were just simply trying to, in a collegial fashion, ask me my opinion. Can you understand why I might think that?
Well, let me...
Can you understand why I might think that?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Of course I can.
Excellent.
But rather than being an explanation to me, for me, for my understanding...
Right.
I'm very transparent. You ask me a question. Ask me any question, Steve. I'll answer you honestly.
Right.
For the sake of the voters who are wondering what's going on here, they're filling it in with because you haven't given an explanation.
I did give an explanation. Go check out my Facebook page. I gave like this long of an explanation of exactly why I voted the way I did. So let me do this because I'm not gonna argue this with you because I'm not going to answer you. Go take a look at my Facebook page. Go take a look at that answer that I gave and see if that answers your question.
Actually, I did.
Someone never goes there.
You just go to Facebook and it's Commissioner Steve Stewart.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually, I think there was even a blog about it. I think they blogged, you know, this was Steve's response to why he voted the way he did.
And really, civilly. That's certainly far from an argument because we got to be able to at least to understand a little bit here. Mm-hmm. What I saw there was arguments for the project and arguments, the benefits of the contract. It didn't really answer why I changed my mind because the way I see it... people, this community is really sensitive to that because how Tim Leavitt promised people one thing, and as soon as he got elected, he did another, and they're still reeling from that. And this is so related to that. And I'm thinking it would be so good for you to fill that void and say, this is why I changed my mind. Because even though, you, it is written there that these are the conditions, and this is the intent, and that's what the people expected. And to say, well, these are all good things now, regardless of all the benefits you can imagine, there's still those other commitments that are made and the word that was given. That's where people feel betrayed.
Gotcha. I will absolutely take that under advisement. I will think that through, and that'll be, we can talk about it again next week. Appreciate you bringing it up in the way you did, though.
Yep,
it's definitely much easier to have a conversation. We're talking with each other as opposed to when we're talking at each other in some grand fashion.
Anytime you want to talk about any issue, especially these important issues, I am game.
I much prefer talking with them in this way than talking with them in a more rhetorical fashion, through large oratory and hammering the fists and making, in some scurrilous claims, in my estimation.
Then let me extend to the invitation. Is there any question would you like me to answer regarding any of this at all, Steve?
I'll think about that.
That's not on your Facebook.
I know. It's like, I don't know. I'll think about that.
Go to my Facebook.
That's what we both say is go to the Facebook. Yeah, yeah, this guy doesn't even really use it. So.
Because if we're going to model transparency, that means we bare our heart.
Yeah.
I
understand the delicacy of it because when we're transparent, things can get twisted.
That's the issue.
Steve, you come by my room the other day and said, "Are we okay?" We're okay, and I'm struggling.
I know.
We had a private conversation having to do with C-Tran, and it's something I have to resolve. And we really have a good relationship.
We do.
And. So I need to understand. As a former legislator and a former lobbyist, we know what that word is and how sacred it is to have credibility. So personally, somewhere along the way, we need to.
Understood.
Yeah, that's me.
Understood. Fair enough.
Okay, so I would. There's our community is torn. When I came out of that meeting, I was steaming, and a whole bunch of the community was steaming as well. And if we're going to heal, and if we're going to actually pull together in unity, there's no substitute for open, transparent, civil, honest questions and answers, and let people know what are we thinking.
I agree with that. My challenge back to you, and I will take the challenge on to really look internally and come back to you. And the challenge is the civility part for you, because there are many people who listen to you and hear you, and the anger that you felt and that you feel.
I still do. I feel betrayed.
So I've been through that more than once. This year, let alone the rest of the 9 years that I have been on this board, been through those moments of feeling betrayed, of being on the wrong side of a vote when you believed that you were right and that the other side was wrong, and that maybe it was even illegal how they got there. I've been there. I have been there. Coming out the other side of that, now it's on you. It's your option, because no one can control your behavior but you, is to either manifest that anger and not only let it breathe, but to fan those flames with the people who we work for and create and enhance the rift, or to look for ways to heal the rift. And sometimes healing the rift means that, I always forget, you have such a great line about, realizing that you can't change the past.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness.
Giving up all hope of a better past.
Exactly. It's that. And we all have those moments where we have to do that. And I'm not saying you should give up on on this issue or on your ideals or anything else. I'm just saying in how you deal with it. Will affect those people who listen to you, as it does when I speak to them.
I mean, you know, we've had intense sessions, this board has, but they could have continued. They could have continued for a while in previous stuff if I would have continued to fan the flames. But I had to suck it up at some point and realize I'm responsible for my own behavior, and I got to be an adult about this and realize that there will be more votes, and that we need to be able to work together toward a better community. And so while I would never give up my beliefs or my principles on that, I did have to adjust my behavior. So that is my only request, is for you to think about that a little bit, in how you in your behavior move forward, how we all kind of move forward.
So in order to move forward, why don't you two guys put that on your Facebook?
So we'll get a nice long list of it on our Facebook page.
We'll get this meeting done.
This is why I love this guy.
Well, if I can just leave one thing here, because it's not about...
I know. I'm on overtime, guys. We understand. You haven't heard anything from me.
That's because we
have a personal thing.
I know.
Let's take a little bit of time, each board time, and we'll talk about heart-to-heart stuff here about these things, because it's really important. And this is not about forgiveness of a better past, because I'm committed to change this. This will not stand.
You can't change the past, right?
No, I'm going to change the future, buddy.
As are we all, one way or the other.
And we can argue for or against issues passionately, but you will, if ever you find that somehow I betray my word to you, and I go back and I promise you something, and then I decide, well, something else is better, and I just simply leave that behind, then I feel like I owe you an explanation.
Understood. And okay. And we'll just, you know.
We got there.
We got it.
Move on.
Okay.
We'll come back next week. To be continued. All right. I don't have anything else. Mark?
3-3, vacancy review.
3-1 and 3-2, you don't have anything?
No work sessions, follow-up.
That makes it quick.
The people don't like doing that 10-step, so they're not asking for work sessions.
We're told that we were going to see this.
Okay, you have seen this previously. Yeah. I asked Dr. Melnick to further clarify why he needs this position, and he laid out personally... his rationale for wanting this position filled. First of all, they downgraded the position, so it's cheaper. It's part of their workforce plan. And he has specific duties enumerated in the email that he wants this
90% general fund
person to do.
General fund.
Okay.
How does this fit into the workforce planning?
Well, what they're trying to do is reduce the number of folks they've got, and you know they just eliminated the deputy director position, and they're upgrading a number of folks.
That was a $4,500 saving total. And this is
that was before they upgraded.
Like 60,000.
No, this is an existing position that they have.
Well, they've got to be shorthanded.
That they have reclassified. So
what's the net bottom line increase to the general fund?
It's a $4,500 decrease.
Even with this filled?
I thought with that $4,500 decrease we already...
No, this is not related. This is not related to the other action. What we have is we have this fellow named Brendan who departed, and they want to downgrade his position from a project coordinator to where the heck is it?
What's a project coordinator in the health department do?
Oh, here we are. Project.
This one.
From a program coordinator.
This one. A lot of the 502 stuff, because we're going to be getting hammered with all of the permitting. Yeah, we're going to have to figure out moratoriums and the permitting, and all of that's going to come forward. And other jurisdictions are dealing with it as well, and this position is going to be the one who's going to have to deal with all of this.
Yeah, so they're downgrading from a program coordinator one to a community health specialist.
Okay.
And in the process, they save $4,500 a year.
In other words, they had a vacancy,
yes.
And they want to refill that same vacancy because somebody left. And it's a little bit less.
For a little bit less money.
Okay.
And to do this important new work and existing work.
As I trust Dr. Melnick, he's a good man.
He's a doctor, so.
Sometimes I look at, they take on so much, and they're all good programs.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the way, I always go back and say, is it the role of county health department
And this is one that we get stuck with.
Yeah, and so we weigh it back and forth and back and forth. And that, along with the fact, is the amount of money that we're pouring into the city of Vancouver with no help from Vancouver at all. I have a real issue with it.
Does that affect this decision?
I don't know. I'm gonna read it.
Is this for next week?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I was looking for a decision now.
This is one that the state's coming down with the 502 requirements on the marijuana dispensaries. They're going to put all of these requirements in place. This position would actually be trying to help us with a moratorium or otherwise dealing with the impacts of what the state is doing to us. And we've got to have someone to help us with this. Yeah.
I agree.
And do health assessments of other sources.
I'd like to do them a door and ask for another week.
You want another week?
I really do.
That's fine.
Okay.
I want to combine this with the other information.
Okay, well, it's better than a no.
It is better than a no. Yeah. I like it. Sometimes and maybe isn't a bad thing. All right.
And normally during that week,
how is this going to play into our zoning and permitting and stuff?
You want me to talk? That's in my staff report, so
yeah.
All right. I'll get into that.
Cool. Okay. Thank you. All right. Got it. That's vacancy review. Did you have anything else?
No, sir. I'm done.
Kelly?
Just one quick thing that came in. A guy named Jeff Carlson with Marriage Team is asking whether you're interested in buying a table at an event they're having on November 2nd, tailgate party and auction with Dick Butkus. Table would cost, for VIP table, about 15
Dick Butkus.
Yiffy, what's that?
Hall of Fame, linebacker. Yeah. From the Chicago Bears. Yeah.
Oh, he's tough.
That's yeah, right. Exactly. You have to be. Yeah.
Or as little as $510 for a main event table, in either case, it'd be 10
cents. They're getting expensive, aren't they?
They really are. I don't think from county resources, from my own purposes.
I think
the invitation to those things, make sure that Linnea gets us all the invitation to it, but as far as buying a table, I wouldn't see it.
I agree.
Okay.
So no money.
Cool. Anything else?
We have a little bit less than we had last week.
Fair enough. Excellent. What do you got?
We're going to save it with those.
Continue on that 502 thread. You guys approved a 6-month moratorium on I-502 mm-hmm. related uses in August. Because we did that by an emergency resolution, that requires a hearing within 60 days. You have that hearing on Tuesday, so I don't want you to be caught off guard. Gordy and Chris Horn and I will kind of present both the resolution and what it means. We'll do some background on what the state process has been thus far and what we expect it to be moving into next year, and then report out on what we've done, which is form our kind of little coalition, which includes public health as well as the sheriff and others, to try to start kind of wrapping our head around what our draft model code is, as well as putting our map together that shows the buffer areas for what's required in law, and then also tracking the licensing process, which includes the final rules that aren't out yet.
I'm not understanding how the health department is going to get involved in it. Why are we?
The health department actually will bump into it in a couple of ways. We have prevention programs and things of that nature. So you have people like who you saw.
Smoking prevention going
right
on now.
So like a Chavez who you met at the Board of Health the other day.
So we're taking on another one.
Well, there's other applications that are more specifically health related that we may have to do, which has to do with the whole permitting of these types of operations and what they're required to do under the law, which is quite extensive in terms of.
That's where I'm really having trouble expanding our health department to deal with marijuana and the placement or the health issues that go with it when we already are full-blown anti-smoking going on.
Right. And I think before I try to justify that position based totally on I-502, mm-hmm. I haven't looked at what Dr. Melnick said. I'm guessing this position does more than just that.
That was only the first couple.
I just haven't had a chance to look at it. But I'm guessing that's just a piece of it.
What else you got?
So any questions on Tuesday?
We're just going to extend it and say that the process is going on.
We'll give you an update and kind of let you know the timeline. On the legislative front, you guys talked a lot about that already, but the chamber and CRDC do the big legislative breakfast every year. Mm-hmm. That's December 11th this year. It's a Wednesday morning. I've booked a conference room with the help of Tina and Linnea, like we did last year. I've already got about 5 commitments from our delegation, from the legislators. Brian Enslow and Josh Weiss from WASAC are going to come down, and Mike will be here. So that's going pretty smoothly so far. At your next, or not your next board time, but the 23rd board time, Mike Burgess will be here to talk to you about what's going on with legislation thus far, and then what anything you want to give him or me as agenda items. And then at Mark's management team meeting the next day, so Mike's going to stay the night and then come to the management team meeting to get feedback from all the department heads on what kind of things are happening with the county and what they might
see
as legislation. That's the 23rd and 24th of this month. So coming up.
You all got a copy of the email I sent him also, reminding us of what was still alive from last session.
Yep. Yeah, and I saw that. It sounds like he's going to get back to us and also kind of let us know if they are, keep us tracking as far as whether there's going to be an interim, if they're going to get called back for special in November for transportation.
That's up in the air too,
Well, and we'll find out more. Hopefully we'll find out more from the legislators when they come down on Monday, although it sounds like from the previous listening sessions that's all they're doing is listening. They're not telling us, telling anybody what's going to happen. They're just
I can't imagine being called back for special session for a gas tax only when it's so broad.
I agree.
Well,
and as Mike was saying, it would be hard to believe that it's going to, but, he could always call them back, but he wouldn't do it unless he has a deal. It's political suicide to call them back without a deal in place. So.
And you're not going to, the likelihood of them calling a special session for reforms, not going to happen.
Yeah, well, and that would be the package. It would have to be a package deal, kind of like how they're doing in the special session in Oregon, where they're dealing with PERS and taxes and GMO labeling. They've got all of it packaged up and say, here, take it or leave it.
I would be, with the atmosphere and what's going on here with this, even the rift that's happening between the Attorney General and the legislature and the governor trying with this project, this is not the time that they're going to say, I think we're at a good time where we can make good reforms. They need to get past that.
There's other money out there, and the money that they were using to move this project along was coming from the 9.5-cent gas tax. And it was identified as a TBA.
Right.
But then that's all they identified it as, and they were drawing millions out of that.
Yeah, I'd sure love to have them use that money for something useful.
It's too bad that they can't direct that to job specifics, and that's what you were talking about.
Right,
Steve.
Right. Okay. Anything else, Axel?
Yeah, I sent that letter to Mr. Stordahl last week. I haven't heard anything yet, and I wrote and drafted up the compliance agreement for the Libby farm, and I've talked to him, and I think he's a little discouraged because he does like doing the pigs, but I think he understands that
anything but the pigs
with the whole situation and the number of
it's not pigs. What is it now?
Swine.
No, and what's the official thing you put?
Swine husbandry.
Swine husbandry. That's the what you were telling me you shouldn't do anymore.
Long story short,
that's a euphemism.
He's been pretty gracious about working with me, and he's going to come in tomorrow, I think, and read over the compliance agreement and probably sign it, is my hope. And then we'll have both the notice to vacate the county parcel as well as an agreement in place to get rid of the hogs, which I think will appease the neighbors for now.
You said I got freezer room.
Let me ask you about that. That parcel is, I thought that we had to have a board action to sell a parcel.
And so all we have with that, I guess since 2011, Habitat for Humanity has been in loose conversations or looking at that parcel as a potential site for a project. What we have now is an official notice of intent from Habitat to Humanity to Don Benton or DES that we want to purchase the parcel.
It's to purchase it. I thought we already owned it.
Well, Habitat would purchase it from us.
We'd sell it to them. So
you are correct in the sense that everything will still, if the project moves forward, it'll all have to run through.
I need to understand about that because I understand that we still own the property and we give them a lifetime lease to put the house on. And so my question is, when they do that, what happens to the property tax?
I don't know.
It seemed like we still own the property.
I don't know. That'd be part of what it
is. We have a really good example because I know that we just did one, so I should be able to pull that up.
In a lot of cases, Commissioner, if public property is leased to a third party, they don't pay property taxes because it's public property, but they pay a leasehold excise tax. Yeah. Someone does.
Somehow we need. I just need that
information.
I just got a deal in one of the NACU magazines, mm-hmm. and it showed one of the legislators showing to the federal government how much of that, how much of their county was tax-free property in the county. And his map was staggering.
Yeah.
And that's where
County? Where was this?
It was just in the NACU magazine.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And it's one of the things that we have to be so careful of here, mm-hmm. because that's what finances the county here.
That's true. It just shifts the cost burden.
I got one last thing. Commissioner Bedore got slapped for an unplanned executive session subject. Mm-hmm. That slap is mine. Because I was aware of it, and it slipped my mind, and I forgot to share that with you.
No problem.
So,
we'll still blame the door.
Wanted to correct
we'll
that.
We'll still blame David. It's fine. Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly. You're new, man. We'll ease you in a little bit.
There's grace. You accommodated it. Thank you. You still get an A+. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
No, great. and we are scheduled for next week and having an executive session. So it'll be fine.
Okay.
Cool. All right. We're out. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
All right.
What happened to the short meeting?
Not six, but...